Talking Podcast, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. Appreciate you supporting those that support us. Tell a friend, as Adam says. We appreciate the word of mouth support. Get the word out there. Get this thing. I really do appreciate it. I like doing it. I like you supporting the people that support it so we can continue doing it. And we appreciate you listening. Feedback, drdrew.com/contact. Give me feedback. Anything you'd like to hear interviewed here, or things we didn't hit, you want to hit, or you'd like questions answered, check it out there. It is my privilege today to welcome Scott Thompson. Comedy album Is Not a Fan, available on Amazon and iTunes. And you have a book as well, right?
I do, yeah. It's called Buddy Babylon, the autobiography of Buddy Cole. It's a fictional memoir of a character of mine.
Oh, how interesting. And Buddy is in the Après le Déluge.
Yes, and then I have a one-person show which I'm touring, which is called Après le Déluge, which is the Buddy Cole monologues, and it's 10 monologues of Buddy Cole after the Kids in the Hall went off the air. So it's the last 25 years, and history changes, everything around him changes, but he doesn't budge.
And so Après le Déluge is after the flood.
After the flood, yes.
And the flood is when you're with them?
Yes. That's a reference to the Kids in the Hall, I guess, at the top of the wave.
Got it.
Yeah.
You can follow Scott at Scott Thompson. Is there an underscore?
There's an underscore.
Scott underscore Thompson?
Yes.
Okay. And you've got such interesting life experiences. I want to get into all that. Maybe sure. Start with the deluge, what that was like and what happened
since. You mean the Kids in the Hall?
Yeah.
Well, it was incredible. I mean, I'm still in the deluge.
Yeah.
I mean, the water has receded a little bit, but it can always come back. And the Kids in the Hall have never broken up. We're like the mafia. You leave in a coffin. And I've been with them since I was a kid. I remember the first time
I saw them. How did that happen?
Well, I went with a friend. I was an actor, just a regular actor. I thought I was going to be a dramatic actor who was funny on talk shows.
You were on stage or you were doing television?
Stage, yeah. Whatever, anything. I was just started out. And then I went with a friend to a midnight show with the Kids in the Hall. And
we started out. So you're from Canada?
I'm Canadian, yeah. Okay. We're Canadian. And there was like 7 of them at the time. And I just saw them and I literally fell in love at first sight. And I turned to my friend and said, that's what I'm going to do.
Oh, wow.
And
how old are you at that point?
23.
Wow.
And I just knew that was it. That was the rest of my life was set. I had no doubt. And then I basically decided that all I had to do was get them to notice me. And then I was so arrogant as a young person that I thought, when they see what I can do, they'll have no choice but to bring me into the group.
Wow.
And so what I did was that night when I saw them perform, they had donuts taped under the seats all over the little theater. And I guess they needed it for a bit later on.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, I'll take all the donuts and I'll throw it at them.
Uh-oh.
So I was just trying to attract their attention.
Uh-huh.
So I just started whipping pieces of donut at them on stage. And they're like, what the hell are you doing?
And they
didn't forget me. I just wanted them to notice me.
Ugh.
You know. And it worked. I mean, it was a calculated risk. They could have just said, they could have thrown me out and that would be the
end.
Did
you have a motivation for it?
No, I didn't. It's sort of like, I guess in trying to impress someone you want to sleep with, like doing a wheelie or something.
Yeah.
Like
you're just getting attention.
I just needed them to know that I existed.
So that then happened.
Yeah.
And then a prey afterwards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that Buddy Cole was my first character that I developed. And Buddy Cole's like an over-the-top queen. He's like a lounge lizard.
Yeah,
he's like a gay man from a different era, like a cravat-wearing gay man kind of thing, like a Quentin Crisp type.
Yeah, or Paul Lynde almost.
Yes, in a way, and in many ways, because in those days you couldn't be openly gay. Mm. You had to have a cover,
like a cravat.
Yeah, exactly, a cravat. Exactly. So, that was the very first character that I created when I joined the group. And I did him for years on the show. And then when I left the show, I've continued to do him for years. I do stand-up now as well. But there are certain topics that I can't touch, but he can.
He can say
anything. Well, Buddy Cole does a whole piece on the Me Too movement.
Oh, yeah.
Which is called Pound Me Too. And it's all about... He's just glad that they don't say hashtags. They don't call them pound signs anymore.
And why?
Because Pound Me Too wouldn't have had quite the same impact. So those kinds of things.
And why did you leave the group?
I'd never left the group.
Oh, they said that I left. Okay.
Yeah, I never left the group. We just stopped making television.
Yeah.
And then we went our own way. And we blew up for like 5 years where we didn't even talk to each other. I think we were too... in each other's pockets.
Mm.
We just were such an intense group, and we were together for 10 solid years of work. And then we made a movie. It was a disaster financially with Paramount called Brain Candy. Mm. I mean, it's a cult hit, and I'm very proud of it, but it was a financial disaster.
Mm.
And then we came back after 5 years and went, you know, chemistry is something that doesn't happen very often in life.
Yeah.
And so we've been together ever since.
Oh, nice. All right. So you grew up in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
Well, you know, that's a pretty big question. I have four brothers, so I had a pretty rambunctious childhood.
They beat the shit out of you?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody beat the shit out of me.
Okay. Were you youngest?
No, second oldest.
Second oldest.
But I wasn't the biggest. I'm like one of the smallest of my family.
But four brothers, everyone's beating the shit out of everybody.
Basically, that's
but there's always some triangulation.
Yeah,
and somebody's there's getting the worst
always.
Of it.
I mean, that's how you would say hi. You would punch as you pass them in the hallway, you punch them. And so it was just constant.
Yeah.
Constant violence. Some of it good, some of it's bad. You know what I mean? There was loving violence, and then there was regular old violence. But yeah. So it was a pretty, you know.
Were your parents also aggressive? Is that why there was
my father very much so?
So that's where that son was being acted out then?
Yeah, yeah. My father very much so. My mom, no, not so much. She didn't know anything about men. She only had a mother and a twin sister. She never had a father.
How come?
So her father died when she was, when my grandma was pregnant. So she had this kind of ache for men. Like, I mean,
she lucked out.
She really did. And she just was.
You guys fixed that?
We did.
Yeah, good.
She was obsessed with men. She still is.
You didn't solve that by
no.
Most women, when they have moms, when they have just boys, are like, "Oh my god!"
Well, she
what's
had
going
no
on
idea.
Here?
But I think my mom, even to this day, will say that she would rather have had five boys and five girls because she thinks the five boys are simpler, maybe more difficult,
not as much intrigue,
but simpler.
Yeah, interesting.
And I agree with that.
And your dad, so he was sort of physically abusive?
Yes, he was.
Very.
Yeah.
Pretty bad.
Yes.
Was he from military or something? Or
no.
He just was that guy. Was he drinking too?
No, he's one of those. He was like an amazing, like he was violent and sober. So is that like that's a gold star.
that's a rare
father.
Rare violent dad.
No, my father was actually, my father's actually a really good drunk. When he drinks, he's actually a better person.
What did he do for a living?
He was an engineer.
Yeah. And did he ever act that out on your mom?
Never.
Yeah, interesting.
Never. I mean, there might have been a few times when she got in the way and she might have taken a clip, but...
But that was accident. Collateral damage.
Collateral damage, yeah.
And so did you... Sometimes when that's going on in the home, kids will take their first opportunity to get the hell out of there.
Yes.
Yeah. How old were you when you left?
18.
So you stuck it out pretty good.
I finished high school and then I went away for a year. I was on basically my life changed when I left home and I spent a year in a program called Canada World Youth where I got put into a family in the Philippines. And it's this wonderful program that they have in Canada, which is like the Peace Corps.
Yeah, yeah.
Except the difference is there's no... No one's pretending that you're doing any good. Like, you don't pretend that you're building homes or wells.
Out.
You're just there to learn.
Did you learn?
Oh, Tagalog?
Yeah.
The whole program, it's so idealistic. It was a legacy of Pierre Trudeau, who was Justin's father, which is basically to build bridges between the first world and the third world. That kind of like utopian kind of idea. And so basically, that's all I live with a family. They adopted me. And like a family of 14 who lived in like a Nipa hut with no electricity
in
a village. Like never.
Did it freak you out at first? Or?
Oh, I absolutely. Yeah. Completely freaked out.
Were you worried that you're not going to make it?
Yeah. I mean, and they probably wouldn't do that today. They put us, Mike, where I was put, I was all alone. I was put in the middle of a district that was filled with guerrilla activity. Not the ant, like guerrilla. There was like a slumbering... war that had been going on for years, which is still going on in the Philippines. They were called the New People's Army. So there was like violence occasionally.
Oh my God.
And it was pre-internet. There was no way to talk. No, you couldn't. There were no phones.
Did you have no plumbing?
No, we shit in a hole in the ground.
Were you exposed to? Did you develop any infectious disease?
Yes, I did. I came home with kwashiorkor. And
well, that's protein malnutrition.
I had two diseases. I had a worm.
Like a liver fluke?
Something like that.
Because that'll make you look kwashiorkor.
I had like a big belly.
Yeah, that's from you had a Chinese liver fluke.
Something like that. And I had like, and I was very, I had two things, kwashiorkor, which was, a malnutrition.
Protein malnutrition.
And then I also had a fluke. So yeah, I did. But it was worth it. Because you learn at a very young age. And when I grew up, everybody was white.
Yeah.
I'd never known people. I didn't know people that were different races or anything.
So you learned at a very young age what?
That people are exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can learn that on paper. And on paper, I knew it. But I didn't know it like in my heart. And that's kind of a... That's like a huge thing to absorb. Because then you look at the world and you're like, oh my God, a monsoon in Bangladesh is as bad as a monsoon in Burbank.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a big, and I've never let that leave me.
Did you speak Tagalog going in or did you have to
learn? Oh, no, I didn't speak a word of Tagalog.
How did you communicate with your family?
Well, they
family of origin. I mean, you're back in
Canada. The foster family.
I mean, did you send a hello mother, hello father kind of letter back to your
parents?
They
would have, like, you know, aerograms. Remember aerograms, which were envelopes that folded into the envelope and you wrote on them? That's what it was. They take a month to get to Canada. So my parents didn't have, they were just constantly freaked out. They wouldn't hear from me. Yeah, for months they wouldn't hear from me. And then but it was amazing. I mean, you know, it was an amazing experience. I'd never known anything. I'd never known poverty like that. But
you
ended up
having a gastric lymphoma, and it makes me. Then you were fairly young when you had that.
I had lymphoma 10 years ago.
It makes me wonder if it had something to do with all this.
You know, it's funny you say that.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. Because you're a doctor.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty convinced that my lymphoma came from some things in my childhood. I had mononucleosis twice when I was a child, and I know that they're linked.
Well, it says something about your immune system.
Yes.
And lymphoma is an immune tumor.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
gastric lymphoma is very strange for somebody that young.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I had 4 tumors in my stomach. Yeah. I have a lot of theories about it. I think trauma is one of the things that...
Emotional trauma.
Yeah. Gave me cancer.
Could be. I mean, again, the immune system and the neurological system.
I'm pretty sure.
They develop together.
Because I look at things that when I was a child, I was I was ill. I had a lot of things I had encephalitis when I was a child.
Jesus.
I had a lot of things go wrong with me. I almost died a number of times.
From what?
Encephalitis.
That's one.
I got... I was in a... I was in a shooting when I was a boy.
Oh, of course you were.
Yeah. And that's what that
were you an active shooter?
No,
you,
no, no.
You I was caught in the crossfire.
The boy in my class shot my school up.
Oh my God.
When I was 16.
This is in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Funny, we don't ever hear about that.
No, they don't. It happened so long ago, but it was the beginning in many ways of the modern high school shooter, but it was pretty much the first. But I believe that what happened that day did something to me.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
You were actually shot too?
No, he missed. I was late for class, so I was coming. I was saved by another teacher. I was very, very, very lucky. But it's funny with my lymphoma. This is the weird thing. I think I probably PTSD. I think is something probably contributed to my cancer, because my cancer happened. It happened instantly. I'd been going downhill for months, thinking things had been like I'd have pink eye that wouldn't go away, little things like that, prostatitis, that sort of thing. And then one night in West Adams, which is where I was living, I was very depressed. My life was not good at all, and I heard gunshots outside my my door. And I hadn't heard gunshots since I was a boy, and I immediately went into shock. And I immediately was back that day. And I remember everything moving very slowly, the way it does when you're in shock, and thinking, which wall is the thickest? I must find the thickest wall, and then I must sit against that wall until it's over. And that's what I did. And the next morning, when I woke up, I had pain in my stomach.
Mm.
And it never went away. And then I went right to my doctors, and I said, there's something wrong with me. And I believe that the trauma, something that what happened to me when I was a child, changed me in a cellular level.
Mm.
And cancer, I kind of personify cancer as like a demon, and it gets a root in, like a hook, like a hookworm in a way. And then it just spends its lifetime building things that, like, oh, I'll get cigarettes for a period. Oh, a little coke period. Oh, a heartbreak. And it collects all these things. And then I think the when it heard the, I know it's weird, I don't think it's not a demon, but cancer, the trigger, the sound of those bullets triggered it. And it was instant. I had no, and the next morning I woke up with pain. It was almost like the bullet had been like chasing me for like 30 years, you know? So that's one of my, cause I can't figure out why I got it. Like my family we're not cancer people. We're heart and stroke people. And like I have my father and his brother and his sister. They're like in their 90s. She's not, my aunt is 97. My uncle's 95. My dad's 90. They don't have cancer. You know what I mean? Like, how did this happen?
And you weren't exposed to any weird chemicals or anything?
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah. I think I might be part of that Monsanto claim because I've never done anything about it.
Roundup?
Yes. Because I was working a lot in the garden at that time. I've never done, I keep looking at those reports and go, maybe I should say something because
it's
unclear.
It's very unclear, even though they're trying to make a big case. It's not clear that Roundup does it. It makes me wonder also if there was any chemicals in the Philippines when you were there. Did anybody else get sick that you left behind? Or
No, I don't think so. But I definitely think that some of these things that happened when I was young definitely left their mark.
Yeah. You better look at the fluke, too, and see if there's any, you know, reports of.
And it's my gut.
Yeah.
And I also think about the gut, like fear lives in the gut.
Right.
And I think I've been afraid most of my life. It doesn't appear like it, but I have.
It's a very interesting question about the impact of the autonomic nervous system where there's a big parasympathetic web just right on top of your stomach here. And who knows what – we don't know what it does.
We don't know what it is.
No, how it works. We
know
what it is.
What's it look like?
Looks like a big spider web kind of, like a big mat.
Are they nerves?
It's nerves, yeah.
It's right here?
You've got one in your pelvis, you got one in your pin, you got one over your chest.
And what is this?
And the one here is just your what people commonly call it the solar plexus, but it's just a web of parasympathetic tissue. Primarily.
And when you're – is that where the fear and flight comes from?
The fear is more of this chain that goes along your spine, but it's kind of integrated up here in the stomach. And obviously we feel it. A lot of what gets back to our brain comes from like my heart hurts when
you say that.
Well, there's actually a thing here that's picking stuff up. It's not really pain.
So there's stuff that gets back to your brain happening here.
There's a form of processing. Yes.
Maybe the way the plants think.
I think it's more than that. It's the seed of emotion. It's really the primitive source of emotion is in our body.
So like the pre-brain?
I think it deserves its own.
Its own thing.
It's what your brain is embedded in is this web of information that comes out of your body. And it's where emotion is stored and processed. And when you say I have a feeling, it's in your body.
Yeah, it's not here.
Yeah, feelings are processed up here. Yeah. It's in your body. And so, yes, of course. I can't sign off on the specific cause, but I definitely co-sign the idea that there's a relationship.
Well, I know I had PTSD, but in my day, you didn't talk about those sorts of things. But I remember at least for 10 years, if I heard – well, first of all, even today, if I see a room and there's balloons in it, I don't want to go in that room because I don't want that balloon to pop.
Right. And you heard this gunfire in 2009, right? Mm-hmm. But you'd had something happen in 2000 already too.
Yes, I was firebombed.
Of course, as is the custom, as most people have.
A year before the rest of the world.
What the fuck?
I was firebombed by an Islamic fundamentalist group in West Hollywood.
West Hollywood?
Yeah, I know.
Why did we hear about this?
Because it was pre-9/11.
Oh.
And I think if it had happened, obviously, a year later, it would have been
much bigger.
So no one paid any – it was a story, very, very tiny.
People probably think it was like a fluke or some crazy nut
job. I think it happened on November 1st, so it was the morning of Halloween. Mm. It was in West Hollywood. I think the police thought it was a gay thing. Like, oh, you fags, you're always just doing crazy stuff on Halloween.
Or maybe an anti-gay thing, right?
They might have.
Yeah.
Except there was a note that said, in the name of Allah, the merciful and compassionate.
And did they know whatever you're going to tell me led up to this?
Yes.
Did the police know about that?
No.
Okay. What happened?
I made a movie. My boyfriend at the time was a Frenchman. He still is a Frenchman. And he's a documentary filmmaker. And he made a movie about Saddam Hussein called Uncle Saddam. And it's a documentary about the private life of Saddam Hussein and his family, but done in a kind of a like Entertainment Tonight, Hollywood, like Dynasty kind of a way,
tongue in cheek,
campy. Pre-9/11, pre-war, all of it.
Those sons were into weird stuff.
Uday and Kusei. Yeah. Our cats at the time were named Uday and Sajida, named after Uday, the son, and Sajida, the wife. And the day that the Americans invaded Iraq, Sajida ran away. The wife ran away.
So has anyway, she been seen ever since? She been seen since?
No, she disappeared. But then Uday flowered, interestingly enough. As soon as Shashida left, Uday just flowered into a fantastic cat. I think to make up for that name, for his, you know, his human namesake being such a monster. But yeah, so we made this movie. I wrote it and helped produce it. And it was about Saddam Hussein. And then it started doing like a film circuit. And then about a
month. It was not. Did it in any way disparage Muslims or
no?
Why?
No, it disparaged. It was disparaged Saddam Hussein. But we're apostates. It doesn't matter. We're not Muslims, and he is a Muslim, even though he was a terrible Muslim. And
was this, if anything, to do with the Shia Sunni conflict? Was this?
No, I really don't know. I just know that it was funny. It was made by two men, two gay men. I think that had a lot to do with it. And I think I really don't know, but my boyfriend told me at the time, he said, we're being watched, something's going to happen. And this is 2000. I was like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. And then about 2 weeks before the firebombing, I noticed a man outside our house in a car reading a newspaper, like in the afternoon, every day, just like get smart. Like I was like, this can't be really happening. And then on November 1st, they came to our house in the night while we slept, and they filled the big garbage, you know, the blue one, the black one, and the green one, the big giant garbage cans with gasoline, put them on the front lawn, set them on fire. Then they had buckets of red paint, and they splashed the house like blood. And then they put a note in our foyer on the floor that said, in the name of Allah, the Merciful, burn this satanic film or you will be dead. And I think I think every time my PTSD dries up, I feed it again. And then I also think that traumatic events in my childhood make me chase it.
Well, that's a fascinating insight, because that's exactly what humans do. They do what's called a traumatic reenactment.
Yes.
When something about our wiring, and no one really has satisfactorily explained this, when particularly under the age of 12, when we have an adverse event, we repeat it. Or we're attracted to people and circumstances where it inevitably gets repeated.
I think that's what happened to me. It's like I've been trying to explain this to people. A lot of people that haven't experienced that kind of intense violence or trauma when they're young don't quite understand it. But it's the idea that when you escape with your life, when you beat the monster, whatever the monster is, it's such a thrill. And so euphoric, nothing touches it. And I think I've been chasing that my whole life.
That's your version of it, which is interesting. And I've also noticed people even do crazy things like, I'm going to go live my life now. Yeah. And they live it in some extreme dangerous way that ends up endangering them again. And now that I've lived, I'm going to make sure I live my life by nearly dying again.
Yeah, I'm done with this love affair with death. I'm going to live on the side of a mountain.
Right, exactly. Well, that's a great insight. And if you please let me know if you ever hear any, if you have any more ideas about what our brain is doing and why evolutionarily we would evolve like that.
Yeah, that's the part I find most interesting. Doesn't make sense that I would keep running towards danger.
Well, I think it has something to do. The only provisional theory I've got right now is that it has something to do with memory, in the sense population memory, and that is to say, we have explicit memories, right? We can remember things that we have, and they're notoriously inaccurate, but we have them. We have ways of writing things down and memorializing them, but even that gets changed and mythologized. Yeah. And certainly if it's just the spoken word or we act it out, it would get changed over time. But when we repeat things, like in a ritual, we do the same ritual every year. We get if you're Jewish, you get the salt water and the parsley and the egg and the blah, blah, blah. And it never changes. And that's an externalized memory, almost like a downloaded memory that you repeat. And I have a feeling that may be what the evolutionary piece is, why we do that, gone awry in these childhood trauma situations. Is that kind of
fit? It does, actually. Yeah. And it even explains my career choice and coming out the way I did. Like, no one came out on television in 1989. Like, that was kamikaze, like going, let's see how this goes. It didn't go so well. But, you know, I just thought every time I see
seeking the danger.
Yeah, I see an open window and rather, like Garp said, keep walking. I'm like, see what happens when I throw myself out. But
did that ever I bet, though, that also served you well at times.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It serves me well as an artist.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because going through the door, through the window, whatever it might be, is a little bit of through the looking glass also, in the sense that
I'm not afraid of life.
There could be magic in the other
side.
Yes,
that's absolutely true. I'm not afraid of throwing myself into something new. Mm. Not at all. No. I mean, to a fault in a way.
So yeah, well, that's the fault is the where it goes bad, where the trauma gets
like my father keeps re-traumatized. Saying, when are you going to retire? I'm like, retire? What are you talking about? I'm not even...
And how old's your father now?
My father's 89.
And what part of Canada was this you guys were in?
Brampton, which is just north of Toronto.
North of Toronto.
Yeah.
Like the suburbs, those big, beautiful suburbs that are up there?
Yeah, yeah.
Those are beautiful.
Yeah. Toronto's an amazing place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened with the high school shooting? What was that all about?
Well, he sat behind me. He shot 16 people.
But I mean,
killed three.
Was he a psychopath like the kids in
Colorado? I
don't know.
See, this is the 70s. No one really in those days, the school and the town was so traumatized.
Did he kill himself too?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. That people just didn't, they kind of buried it. And in fact, this is a funny thing. My father, 2 years ago, for the first time ever, asked me what happened that day.
Wow, age 87.
Yeah, because you know why? Because they finally put a memorial in my high school, and my father, because my mother is in long-term care. She has dementia. So I was there, and we went to visit my mom, and then he said, I want to show you something on the way home. And we went to my high school where they have the memorial. Mm. There's a finally, and they've been trying for a long time to get this memorial, and it was very moving. And my father and I sat together on the memorial, and he said to me finally, what? So,
how'd this go now?
What happened that day? Because this is crazy how much we've changed. Like, I remember very clearly finally getting sprung from where we were hiding and the police telling us to go home right away. And I did not go home right away because I was so high.
Euphoric.
If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I was euphoric.
New to Podcast One, it is The Trials of the Vampire, straight out of Australia. When a male prostitute is accused of raping and mutilating a client, few doubt his guilt. The attack was shocking, and the victim claims the attacker boasted about being a 200-year-old vampire. To hear the whole story, you must go to podcastone.com or make sure you get the new Podcast One app. This is a story you do not want to miss. All right, you're looking to buy a car. You may have heard terms like MSRP. You might be familiar with them, but do you really know what they stand for? What it means? Same goes for invoice, list price, dealer price, all that stuff. It's just enough to confuse anybody. What you want is the true price, the actual price. And now you have true price from True Car. You'll know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. And True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your home. How do you know True Price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the car you want. You see that scattergram. You lock in that price, and your certified dealers know this, so they set the true price competitively so they can win your business. And once you lock in that price, you know you've locked in a price for an actual vehicle on a True Car certified dealer's lot. So when you're ready to buy new or used, visit True Car. That's right. Get that true price from True Car, whether you're buying new or used, and visit True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. It's summer, and you can get dehydrated more than any other time of the year. And whether you're exercising, lying on the beach, let's face it, hydration is a big deal. And a lot of people don't understand it. The way to stay hydrated is with a proper balance of glucose, sodium, water. Hydrolyte does this better than any sports drink out there. In fact, Hydrolyte is the best oral hydration product I've ever tried. I had planned to invent a product just like this. I knew it was necessary. I knew it was something that would be good for medical reasons, for rehydration, for you shouldn't need an IV. You could do this stuff by mouth. And now Hydrolyte comes with their product in great flavors like orange, berry, lemonade, and it does just that. They've got a pre-mixed drink. They've got a powder. My personal preference is the effervescent tablets. You just simply drop in a glass or bottle of water. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydrolyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydrolyte at Rite Aid or Hydrolyte.com. Again, it's Hydralyte.com/Dr. Drew. And for a limited time for our listeners, you'll save 30% on Hydrolyte when you click through on the banner on our website, drdrew.com, and use the code DRDREW18, Dr. Drew 18 at checkout. So it's Hydralyte.com/Dr. Drew, and then use that code DRDREW18 at checkout for the 30% discount. You will not be sorry. Were you ever an alcoholic or anything? Is that in your family system?
No, that's not. No, And so I remember I had to wait till the bodies were taken out. I was, Jesus. You know, I didn't quite understand what was happening. I didn't really believe what was happening.
Yeah.
I remember everything. I could hear things differently, and everything was so clear and crisp.
Yeah.
And I remember getting home, and the door, you know, the screen door smacking open, and my mother coming out and shaking me and like, where the hell were you? Like, because I didn't even call.
Did she not know about it?
She knew.
Oh, she wondered where you were.
She was furious.
Oh, yeah.
Because she had five kids.
Oh.
She had two of them in the school.
Oof.
And this is the best part. So I asked my mom, this is hours after. So I asked my mom, so where's dad? Expecting that my father had come home. And she goes, well, what do you mean? Your father's at work. And I said, well, didn't you call him? She goes, don't be ridiculous. I'm not allowed to call your father at work unless it's an emergency.
Oh.
That's how much we've changed. And then my brother, who had also been in the school that day, punched me in the shoulder and went, you weren't shot. Don't be such a fag.
That's a big deal.
He didn't say the fag part, but that's really it. So it was like, you weren't wounded. So what's the problem?
And so do you have – I'd love to get your insight on the Parkland thing, say, that what happened.
Ah, yes. I'm quite obsessed with – I've been writing a movie for many years trying to get it made. I think one of the problems, I think they should – I think I'm very impressed by those kids.
Mm.
And I'm very – I worry for them. But I also think to myself, they're children.
Mm.
They're far more resilient than we are.
Mm-hmm.
They will get over it. Of course, they're going to have problems, and some of them will probably have things that will it will change their entire lives.
Yeah.
And it is true. You're still going to have a fantastic life, but I would advise that they get some therapy.
Of course.
Now, they didn't do therapy when I was young, and but I also would say that they should probably stay away from the public eye. I think that's actually a problem as well. I think that the fame could warp them.
It perpetuates the high, too.
I think it does.
Yeah.
Because I remember very clearly in school, we were so excited that we were the whole world.
Yeah.
I mean, we were the number one story in the world for a while. We had telegrams from the President of the United States, from the Prime Minister of England, from the Queen. So we were like stars. And that year, everybody got the school jacket. And we dined out on that story for years and years and years. And I think it affected me. I mean, it's my first real experience with fame. Like, my first interview was at 16 to the CBC about it.
So part of the repetition could be towards that high, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even this, is part of the problem.
But again, you synthesized it and made it productive, right? You made it creative and productive.
That's what I think. My thing is, if you're wounded, remember that when it heals, it will be stronger, and then do something with it.
I like that you did something with it in a sense that you took other strengths and ideas and pulled it all together into one new thing.
Yes,
and that's what a lot of people don't. Do.
They don't.
Which is that synthetic piece.
But
that's
important. I think what I'm just very lucky that I think that I'm made this way. Like I have an artistic soul. Mm. I have an artist's heart. So for me, no matter what happens to me, I'll always find a way to synthesize it into something creative.
I'm just looking at that. I get everything that you've been
There's
through.
A lot of trauma.
Oh,
there.
You got kicked out of NYU for being disruptive.
York, not NYU, just York. Yeah,
York University. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and you're not even. I'm sure there's stuff that isn't there, but it's.
Oh,
there's a lot.
Were you misbehaving?
Yes,
because of all this.
Or? I was such a contrary child. I had no respect for authority.
That's because of dad's physical abuse?
Probably.
Stuff? Yeah.
Most likely.
Yeah.
And I'd never...
Because the whole society then becomes dad. You know,
Everything is my father.
Yeah.
Everything. The country was my father.
Yeah, right. The external world becomes dad when the dad's
Everything abusive. Was... Yeah. Everything
We have
to
lots
me.
Of people like that these days.
Everything's my
Either
dad.
Either the abandoning dad or the abusive dad.
Yeah, everything's my father.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so you were acting out against that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You don't think I'm good enough? Watch this. You don't think I'm a man? Okay, watch this. I think my entire life is proving that I'm a man, that I'm good enough. Yeah.
Then that was dad telling you weren't.
Yes, absolutely.
Did he want you to be an engineer or something?
Yes, absolutely.
So he
wanted all of us to be two things, an athlete, a professional hockey player, or an engineer.
And there were four brothers?
There's five of us. And one of my brothers was an extraordinary athlete. extraordinary.
Ice hockey.
And he, yes, and he could have been, if he could have been in the NHL. And we were only a year apart, and we were Irish twins, and he could have been.
What's he doing now?
He's dead. Oh. He committed suicide.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And the other two, three, I'm afraid
they're, to ask. They're alive.
What, the engineer?
One's an engineer. And one's a banker.
Okay.
And one's a comic like me.
Two comics? That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so.
Is he somebody we'd know, and then we know?
No, you wouldn't know him, no. Okay.
Is he up in Canada still?
Canada, yeah.
Huh. That's very interesting.
And all of us were funny. Like, it was a very, comedy in my family was a huge deal.
What's the ethnicity?
Irish, Scottish.
And so, you know, a lot of, the, again, back to humans and their sort of trends, populations that were severely traumatized go to humor.
Oh, God,
you know,
yeah.
Jews, Scottish, Scottish. Yeah. It's, you know,
Humor was everything. Every evening, every dinner was the seven of us sitting around. My mother didn't take part in it. She thought it was awful. But it was basically, who did you see that day? Who was ridiculous? Who was stupid? Who was fat? Who was ugly? Who was whatever, right? And we just told stories. And whoever was the funniest would be, that would be the winner.
And your brother that committed suicide was just a depressive?
Schizophrenic.
Oh, okay, so he had a chronic mental illness.
And, mm-hmm.
Okay.
But it didn't manifest until we were 18.
Well, that's sort of where it happens,
yeah.
Usually.
He was, up until then, he was the golden boy. He was the best looking, the most athletic. He was a perfect, perfect man.
It's a strange illness.
Yeah.
And did he die young with that? Or?
Yes. Yes. He 34.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, and that must have been many years ago.
Yes,
and the treatments
was.
Weren't that great then and stuff.
No, no. And in fact, he had a long period of time before he was diagnosed where he got into a lot of trouble, and he also was hit by a car, so he had developmental problems.
Traumatic brain injury.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, so he had a traumatic brain injury and schizophrenia.
Did he go on drugs at all?
Yes, he did. And they really hurt him. He basically...
That's a bad combo.
Yeah,
and schizophrenia, so, TBI, and drugs. That's
and
a
so
bad
when he
combo.
So he walked funny and talked funny. Oh, yeah, poor guy. He was very cursed, and my family was ashamed of it back then.
Oh, did they take care of him?
They did. And then he was eventually diagnosed with schizophrenia when he got arrested for stalking.
Oh, goodness.
He was obsessed with a young lady. And then he got committed. And then because he got committed, you were allowed to finally have him diagnosed. Because you weren't allowed to back then.
What do you mean?
My parents had no power over him.
Oh, he's an adult.
He's a free agent. It is that way.
Yeah.
So even though he was a danger to himself and people, you couldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was just waiting for that. You know, something terrible to happen. And luckily, it wasn't so terrible. And then he got put on medication, and it seemed to help. But here's the thing. It made him gain a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Sweet. Because he was a beautiful man and an athletic man, and he had a perfect – he was like born with a six-pack. And to see his body – to not be able to control your body – because he wasn't like an intellectual. Yeah. He wasn't dumb or anything, but he wasn't like a – he wasn't book smart.
Yeah.
And it was physicality was everything for him.
Has that are you involved with mental health advocacy or anything as a result of that?
No.
Anything concerns you have politically in terms of LGBT issues? I'm just curious. Anything that you have your eye on?
Well, I'm actually probably one of the few people that's quite optimistic.
Tell me.
Well, I think we're living in a wonderful age, and I'm not. You know,
I imagine. Because you have an arc, and you've had some problems with it.
Yes, and I'm a generation of gay men that went through the AIDS crisis. So for me, it's all I'm in the sun.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was serving lots of AIDS patients back in the day. I mean, I was in training then, and I worked at county
hospitals. So you remember what it was like.
I do.
And they don't.
Nobody
does. World has no idea.
It was the darkest fucking mess. Mm. It was so sad and so dark.
I'll never get over it.
I'm glad we're having this conversation because there's sort of so few survivors.
And all of us have PTSD. All of us are not
Jesus.
Well. No, it's true.
I know, but here's your fifth cause of PTSD.
Oh, and I can go further. But I'm just tough as nails. I am.
But, perfectly for comedy.
Yeah.
So, I feel like we have to bring it up often and memorialize
it. We really do. We need to remember that the LGBT movement is built on the dead bodies of gay men.
And that's really right. That's right. And those guys are not here to speak.
And they're
about
not being
it.
They're not being celebrated.
No.
And they're not being talked about. And they're and you're, kind of rewriting history. And I won't have it.
And I think people, I don't know what they think it was, but we're talking about extremely accomplished. I mean, artists and professors and
it gutted the artistic soul of the West.
Yeah.
And I actually think that might be one of the unspoken truths to why we're in such a state. Because so many great gay men, so many beautiful minds and beautiful artists and souls were taken. And I think that I think that's one of the secret reasons why the West is in such a state.
And it, by the West, you mean Western United States or Western culture?
Western culture.
Yeah.
Because Western culture has turned on itself. And I think that's part of it. These, you know, like you can't – all the bottoms died.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But we got to laugh about this.
Well, what are you going to do?
But
it's true.
It was the saddest goddamn thing I've ever been through. And
society didn't care.
They didn't
no,
care.
No, and that's what they turned its back.
They cared, but it was a little bit like, eh, it's
not
them,
really.
It's them.
No,
it's okay.
They basically were like, you deserve it.
At the beginning.
Oh,
at the beginning.
Absolutely.
But I'm sorry you felt that way towards the end, but come on. We had the AIDS Project.
Oh,
there was big movements and lots of resources.
Absolutely.
But
those
ended.
First few years
yes.
are
oh,
they're,
there was,
they're there
were,
seared on my soul.
Okay, well, that part was at the hands of people who are still around, by the way,
mm-hmm.
and even politicians and
they
stuff
are.
Who took aim.
I don't
aim.
Forget.
Yeah, good.
So when I look at Donald Trump, I go, well, he's not Ronald Reagan.
And some of the other guys.
Like, I'm sorry. He's not George Bush. He's not invading countries. He's not ignoring 35,000 dead men. Ronald Reagan, an actor. How many hundreds of gay men made his face up and did his hair? How many wardrobe men did he work with?
You know,
you know what I mean?
Not,
like
you're
that's,
right. I did not think about that.
I won't forget that.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking about the president at the
An
time
actor.
Because, but what I would say is, I think he was, and respectfully, he was ignorant to what was going on. He didn't just even direct his attention to
Maybe
it.
Maybe not.
Completely ignorant. And that's.
But you look at those transcripts,
and that's
you read
guilty.
Those stories, and they're laughing about it.
Oh.
You read it. They're laughing. They're going, are you a fag, Ronald? There's all these transcripts where these very, very powerful men are talking about it. Yeah. And they're laughing about it.
Well, I'm glad you have this perspective, though. I think it's important for some of the younger folks.
They need to understand that, you know what,
their freedoms and their ability to be angry today is on the backs of some real serious stuff.
Like I go, guys, I just watched a movie called Love, Simon, which is a Hollywood rom-com about a teenage gay boy with a happy ending. Get a grip. Get some perspective.
Yeah. And the other thing is if people, if they take aim at the AIDS crisis, they want to go, they let it smoke. There's in the history of medicine, there's never been this kind of a success story.
It's an incredible success story.
We had this new thing, figured out what it was, mm-hmm. characterized it, got the epidemiology, figured out a causative agent, and came up with treatments. And now it's a chronic illness. Inside of 20 years that happened.
Incredible.
Syphilis took 1,000 years to come up with a decent treatment.
I know.
You know, and so here we are. So everybody, hats off to everybody
yeah.
on this
yeah.
one. But
so I'm quite optimistic.
All right.
I'm sure we'll lose a bit of we're losing a bit of ground, but that ship has sailed.
Okay, I'm delighted to hear that because
yeah.
I am so upset all the time.
Yeah, I'm
upset
not.
Okay, good.
I'm really not. No, I'm actually quite happy right now. I feel like I'm like the cancer might have been the last straw where I just went, okay, I'm gonna be happy.
Well, let me, because you're making me feel better just talking to you. Because I'm just worried all the time. I'm upset by some of the rhetoric that's out there. I'm
yeah,
the all sides.
It's ugly. It's
ugly.
It's,
yeah,
it's incredibly ugly.
But tell me more. What should people do to?
Well, I think people
I mean, what should
have,
be thankful for.
People have got to stop demonizing the other side.
Yeah.
This whole idea, the way that the left and the right has become tribal.
I know it's weird.
It's terrifying.
We're all being held hostage by the extremes. By both.
I agree. The left, the far left, and the far right. I've been held hostage by radicals.
Mm.
I believe that for this is about white people for a second. I think white people on the far left have turned to self-loathing. They can't stop beating themselves up.
Mm.
They look at Donald Trump and they see that horrible straight white man that they hate, that they thought they'd gotten rid of, yeah, right? Yeah. And so they just can't stop flagellating themselves. And the right, the far right, the radicals, have gotten – they've been caught up in the grips of racial superiority.
Yeah, yeah.
They're both right. They're both wrong.
And the right also is trying – they want to go backwards. They want to undo things.
But they're both radicals sort of. That are holding yeah. all the rest of us – and then hostage.
Yes.
And also now both sides, particularly the left, are now saying people like us in the middle were like the Vichy government. Like, you got to make a choice. And I'm thinking, no. Even the language, the resistance, to me it's hysterical. It's so ludicrous. Like, maybe when people are being marched off to camps at night, but like – you can't call it the resistance yet.
No, it's not that.
I find it faintly silly.
Well, you probably heard me talking about TheraWorks Relief on television. If you're one of the millions of Americans who suffer from muscle cramps in your legs and feet, Relief is finally here. TheraWorks Relief, it's a topical foam clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps fast. And with daily use, TheraWorks Relief can even prevent muscle cramps before they start. That's right. Put it on a couple times a day. And these horrible cramps at night that can disrupt your sleep, be unhealthy, because sleep is important. A lot of people have this. Or if you're unable to exercise because of cramps, TheraWorks Relief is your solution. For over a year now, I've been recommending TheraWorks Relief to my family, friends, patients, and results speak for themselves. Now, TheraWorks Relief is the real deal. It's a life-changing product. And best of all, you don't need a prescription. My choice for preventing and relieving muscle cramps. Make it yours, too. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens pharmacies, or at TheraWorksRelief.com. That's TheraWorks Relief, TheraWorksRelief.com. Speak to your pharmacist. You'll find they're about as enthusiastic as I am about TheraWorks Relief. You don't have to take a medication. For the first time, we can do something about cramps without a pill. It's great. Experience relief from muscle cramps for yourself. That is TheraWorks Relief for your muscle cramps. Video conferencing, it has changed the way we do things. And in 2018, the superior product is Zoom. I tell you, Zoom delivers flawless video, pin drop clear audio, instant sharing across any device, desktop, laptop, tablet, mobile. HD video is striking. And you can see up to 49 participants live on the screen. It's crazy. And it's really reliable and so easy to use, so intuitive. With Zoom, you can share anything with anyone from any device, Word file, spreadsheet, presentation deck, YouTube video, photos, whatever it is. Zoom is everything you could have wanted or imagined to you possibly need in a video communication. And with some features you didn't even think of, but you wonder how you lived without it. You can set up a green screen behind you, make a backdrop of your client's logo or whatever you want. You'd be in exotic locations. Now, if you already use Zoom, you know what I'm talking about. You're as enthusiastic as I am. And if you don't, find out. Visit Zoom, Z-O-O-M, zoom.us and set up your free account today. Meet happy with Zoom Video Communications. Set up your free account today at zoom.us. Do you see some of this because you're a Canadian, do you think?
Yes,
are you a Canadian citizen or are you a citizen?
I'm a landed immigrant.
Yeah.
I absolutely believe that's part of it. I don't have a horse in the race.
Unusual as a Canadian and seeing it this way, or is that Canada's look and laugh and shake their head?
Most Canadians are like that. Uh-huh. Yeah, they just look and go, "What the hell are
that's
they
actually good.
Doing?"
I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
But I look at it and I think that Canadians are very schooled in watching this country.
Which is weird.
And no one watches us.
Yeah.
So we're like spies, and we know how to fit in. We pass. And I think that this country honestly needs an intervention. Like Israel and the Palestine, it needs an intervention from countries like a comic from Switzerland, a comic from Canada, peacekeeping countries to come in and to make the left and the right face each other and stop this Hutu Tutsi language, which is
I know.
We're this close to calling people cockroaches.
Yeah, I know. Or putting a star on their chest. And
it's shocking.
Yeah.
Shocking.
Is comedy an answer to this?
I think so.
Okay.
And I believe comedy, there's nothing that comedy can't touch.
And so you're touring now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's exciting is my buddy, people are so thin-skinned now.
Yeah.
But I'm a white man, but I'm allowed to say anything as Buddy Cole because I think the young ones look at him and go, well, that guy's been through a war.
Well, I was thinking that would be nice if that historical perspective came through in the comedy.
I think it does. And so I'm allowed to say things that nobody gets to say anymore, especially white men. And I'm like, wow, it's like a superpower. You know, like I'm really grateful.
And you're romantically involved? You still have a boyfriend from France?
No, I don't.
And the French, can you explain to me, I meant to ask you this earlier. Okay. They have a very strange relationship with Muslims, don't they?
Who?
French. The French.
The French? They Quebec, welcome, you mean?
Oh, he's French. Quebec. He's Quebecois.
Yes.
He's not French, Parisian French.
Who are you speaking of?
I'm talking about French, French. France, French. Because they welcome the Muslim in.
Yes.
And then they won't let them practice their headdress or anything.
It's right. Like, but you have
very
to.
Very strange.
But France has a much greater Muslim population than here.
I know. They welcome them in, but then they don't. Then they don't. They sort of insist that they become French. It's sort of a weird.
They do.
Yeah.
But you're like that, too. America is about. You're a melting pot, too. I mean, that's
historically.
How historically, you are.
Yeah, I think there's that's a how movement I grew up to try to thinking. Allow people to retain. There's a lot
the
of
mosaic,
yeah,
which is what we're called.
Yeah,
I don't think that's going to work.
That's a lot of people say.
I don't think it's going to work. That's what I think is a problem.
Well, if you don't have a common philosophy or a common goal or a common something that mosaic can be held together.
With Canada's different. Yeah. Our common thing that we are a mosaic. But multiculturalism in Canada is like an official religion.
Oh, is that right?
Like it is bred into you.
Even the French?
The French, not as much.
Yeah.
But the Canada are two solitudes. But the difference is, I think because it was two European peoples sharing that conquered land and also sharing it with the natives, not the same way, but now there's a real reconciliation going on. I think that gave Canadians more an ability to live with people that are very different. I think that's one of the things that's really working in our favor. It's as if America started off and said, okay, we beat the Spanish, but instead of vanquishing them, which is what everybody did, let's share the country.
Yes.
And that you didn't do that.
No, no.
But we did when the English beat the French and then said, hey, that was pretty mean what we did. Let's share.
Hang out here for a
that
while.
That never, ever happened in history.
Yeah, yeah.
And we did. And I think maybe it seemed ridiculous 200 years ago, but now it kind of seems smart.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Like I'm looking and going, wow, Trudeau, good on you.
Well, although I'm seeing the rise of envy, I was telling Adam this the other day, I'm also seeing the rise of sort of negotiated winning for everybody. It's like people are willing to come together to form something that benefits. It's not a zero-sum game anymore. We're going to take from the French so the British have it.
Right.
It's like French and the British are going to thrive together.
Right.
And that's I think that's happening more these days at the same time as sort of envy and weird aggression is sort of amongst us.
Yeah.
I don't know.
See, Canada's big deal right now is we're involved in a thing called reconciliation, which is basically a reconciliation with the people that came after the natives. So it's a reconciliation with the native people and acknowledging the past, acknowledging how ugly it was, facing up to it, apologizing, honoring the treaties that were broken over the centuries, and bringing native people more into the family, and vice versa, and changing the Canadian family, there's a lot of changing names to be more native and that sort of thing, and I think that's quite healthy.
I agree. I'm not sure we can pull it off here.
I'm not even. Well, you've got two racial wounds you got to figure out. The black-white things first. Then you might get to the native thing, and I doubt it. Because you did a better job at genocide. Way better than we did.
Sheesh.
We didn't finish the job.
That's so sad.
It is.
Well, listen, we'll wrap this up. I appreciate it. Did I get everything you needed to say?
Yeah, you touched all my triggers.
Good. I hope I feel good. Deep cleansing breath.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad we talked about the HIV epidemic because I bring it up all the time and I just mention to people how sad it was and how people forget. But I'm just glad to find somebody
huge.
Else.
Huge. I'm obsessed with the legacy and how now I feel like all the chickens are coming home to roost. Like all these this past I have to deal with. Like all this pain. You know, like just this sadness that I have, this jealousy that I have.
Of what?
To young people.
Now?
Yeah. I'm working through it and I think I'm doing quite well, but I had a poisonous jealousy of young gay people for a while.
Huh.
Because I was so jealous.
Oh, because they had it so much freer and easier. Oh, well, leave them a a message. Leave them a heritage.
Well,
leave
that's what I'm trying to do. Yeah. I'm trying to move into my elder statesman years. I'm trying to be wise and
to
be.
They need that perspective.
They do need that. And I'm trying. And that's what I'm hoping to become. I'm like Gandalf the Grey, just going, when do I get to be Gandalf the White? I want to let go of all of that. That's what I'm working on.
Gratitude and service.
That's it. I am very grateful now, and I'm very happy and grateful to where I'm at in the world.
Find Scott at Scott_Thompson. It's a nice, easy name.
Nope. It is, isn't it?
Isn't it Scott Thompson underscore?
Yes, yeah, Scott Thompson underscore.
Oh.
Oh. Thank you for Scott catching
Thompson
that.
Underscore. The album is Not a Fan.
Yeah.
iTunes, Amazon. Scott, is there a website too? Is there?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, I appreciate you spending some time with me.
Thank you very
Good
much.
To meet you.
You too.
Thanks a lot.
You bet.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.